I'd like now to welcome Michael Sumner, Melody Sumner Carnahan, Lynn Larson, and Robert Ashley. Melody and Lynn and Robert are authors in a new set of books. It's called the Quadrant Series, debut novels by seasoned writers. And Michael Sumner, co-founder of Burning Books, is the designer of this boxed set of books. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, hello. Thanks for having us, as they say.
Now, this series, it's four first novels by authors who are well-known and distinguished in many ways. How did you get this idea to put together these first novels?
It was kind of coincidental. Several of the authors, all of them, as a matter of fact, are people I really admire, and they happen to be working on their first novel, which is a rather difficult thing to do when you've been working in other areas. So suddenly it was like a light bulb. Oh, let's make them finish their first novels and let's put them all together. Debut novels by seasoned writers.
Which is so interesting because, well, let's talk to Robert Ashley, who's joining us by telephone. You are a composer of opera and contemporary music. Did novel writing, did fiction writing come in later, or were you doing it all along?
I never wrote anything, but I had never written anything except the words for songs, the librettos for operas, and that kind of thing. I mean, I've read a lot, but I never had a reason to think of myself as a writer.
I was thinking when I was reading some of your work, there's also, besides the four novels in this lovely box set, there's also a fifth book called Q Plus One, which is short fiction by the same authors. And I was reading your piece, Bob, in that book of short stories, and I was thinking, if you were composing opera and writing librettos for opera versus fiction writing, there's such different media, because novel writing is, first of all, doing it and experiencing it as a reader, they're both very private experiences, whereas opera is essentially public and collaborative from beginning to end. So what was it like for you to actually writing short stories and writing a novel?
It's very hard to answer that question, because it's true. What you said is absolutely true, that the libretto is meant to be a public thing. But I never thought it was public. I never thought it was differently public than a novel. I mean, if I had tried to imagine a novel, I thought the novel is very public. And it seems to me that the author is always addressing an audience that he/she knows exist, you know, they're your, I don't know who they are, they're your admirers, you know, and I don't think that's any different from writing an opera, where basically it's the same thing, you know the people who will come, you know, wherever you go, there's a certain group of people who like contemporary opera, and so it seems to me they're very same, very much alike, you know?
The story in Q Plus One is called The Hardware Day's Almost Gone, and it's about a boy who likes to throw apples or rocks through the windows of people's cars. And reading it, one got the sense that there was some real-life source to this. What's the source of the story?
Oh, that's true. I mean, that's me.
That means, okay. That,
I mean, in other words, at some point during the novel thing, Melody suggested that I should write a memoir, and I had never thought about that. That idea never occurred to me, I don't think. But suddenly it got sort of interesting. I mean, I had been thinking my whole life about, I think I mentioned it in there someplace, but there that I had read in. I read about Hindu literature, I guess in Mahabharata, I don't know, that there is a certain cycle to the masculine part of your nature, and it, you know, every 14 years, and there's a 10-year cycle to the feminine part of your nature. And so I had been thinking about this for years, because that 14 seems to me to be exactly right for me. And so when Melody said, why don't you write a memoir, I said, I've got on this case about what 14 years means. But I only finished the first 14. So now I've got more parts to go, you know, there are 4 or 5.
Right. Well, the story feels very unfinished. It says to be continued. And so we look forward with bated breath to the next part. Are you going to write it?
As soon as I get some time, I'd like to write it. I mean, you know, it's fun to I don't know. It's not fun to talk about yourself, but it's fun to have these very, very private ideas.
Turning to Melody, on the back of one of the books, there's an interesting quotation that says, "Difficulty is the armature of meaning." What does that quotation mean to you? It's a literary theorist, George Steiner, who wrote that. And I was wondering, and as I was reading your stories, which you can't always get quickly, you either have to read them slowly or read them a couple of times, what the role of difficulty is and how you think about that.
I definitely understand that. And people actually accuse me of trying to write difficult things or being obfuscative, if that's a word, I'm not sure. But it's not really... It's really like the novel is the only way I could tell the story was to set it up in this way of 2 notebooks and diaries. And I guess that the material defines the structure for me, so I wouldn't say it's intentionally difficult.
There is this, when you have these 2 voices, it underlines the whole question of where the truth lies.
Right, and I tend to write in first person, not my first person voice, but I tend to hear a voice and write that person's way of seeing reality. So I had to use their private writing, the 2 characters in the novel, to illuminate the way they saw the world, as opposed to having a narrator. So there's no narrator, which makes it kind of difficult because there's nobody kind of explaining things to you. So it probably is rather difficult, ultimately. Though some people really like it, I don't know.
I really like it.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for helping me out with that one.
I think it's brilliant. You know, I was way into the second reading before I realized Calibri is a child.
Yeah, but girls mature faster, you know.
The girl, they do, huh? 12, yeah. Wait a minute. She's... When I first meet her, she's, what, 14?
Right.
And then next time she's 16? Right?
Right. She goes on to be 21, but, yeah, she's
pretty
much...
That's Lolita.
But she's lived a lot of things
it's because she's so mature. It's because she's so mature that age thing surprises you. And at the same time, it surprises me, and at the same time... You realize finally that she's been speaking about these mature things as a girl. I mean, she's using girl language to talk about very difficult things.
All right, I
All
like
right.
that.
It's true. I mean, I didn't get it the first time. I mean, when I read it the first time, I thought she was like 25, and then I wrote it. And I thought, wait a minute, this she's talking like a teenager. She's talking like a teenager about very complicated stuff.
That's right.
Let's turn to Lynn Larson. I've been reading your short stories in the back of Q+1, and there are some very, very short stories, and that it brings up the whole issue of writing like a one-page story and what you can't tell, what you can actually get across in that. And again, it seems to me that you, in that length, you really... do make the reader work.
Oh, good. I guess everybody needs some work. So that's one way to do it. It's an interesting form. The less is more. But the very short form is a nice segue for me from poetry to prose. And then the novel being a big breath and a different way to look at character and story.
Now, did you write this novel fairly recently? In other words, did it come after working in a lot of other media?
Well, I had written a short story, and several people had said to me, oh, that's the first chapter of a novel, which I thought was an interesting idea, but a novel I didn't want to write because I didn't want to write a novel. It seemed too huge, too much to ask of me. But I did start thinking about it in a exercise of a novel in a month that I had started to do. Actually, Ellen Berkovich had talked about it with me, and somehow I had agreed to attempt it. So in that, I had a form or an idea from that short story and just plugged away.
Would any of you like to read maybe a little bit from one of your works, Melody? Is shaking her head no, but we think that maybe she does want to read after all.
I have an idea that you could read a few paragraphs.
Oh, do you want me to read?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I do. I have other people read.
Okay.
It's so fun.
Really?
Me. Oh, absolutely.
You don't want to read, you don't like to read your own work?
No.
Very interesting. Okay, so this is a story called Blame. Here come the characters speeding by on the Southwest Chief at 92.5 miles per hour. Holding steady into the heart of the desert. Looking around the dome car, first we see the old woman, 93. Fit as a fiddle, says she, on her way to a place she's never been. Next, the conductor, passing through. Handsome, worn, 60-ish, with a slow rolling gait earned from decades of maneuvering the aisles. Arcane sorrow, unexpressed, buttoned up inside his dark blue gabardine vest. Large hands, shortness of breath. Then the crazy appears, acting like he owns the place. We notice immediately his rapturous gaze, gaps in his teeth, broomstick grooming, enormous vision, free range. Here's one we've met before, older now, approaching 40. Crossed one of those hills we all cross if we're lucky enough to get that far. She's decided to lie and tell everyone she's 42 because she doesn't like the sound of 40 by itself, alone. She herself in the singular, heading for the coast. Two clues found in today's crossword. She holds it folded on her lap. She's heard there is almost no Alzheimer's among bridge players and crossword puzzlers, so she's taken up the latter since words are her milieu. Realities. He seems to be leaving her. This is the real husband, the soulmate she craved. He's enamored of the younger daughter of a neighbor. The clues are all in place, only herself to blame. She tried to leave him first, let him off the hook. But she wasn't fast enough, way ahead all along. Then, when the time came, she found herself asleep at the wheel. And that's from...
Thank you.
Thank you. That's from Blame by Melody Sumner Carnahan. Does anybody else want to read a little bit?
No, thank you. I mean, I was going to say that the thing that story hangs on in your attention is when Melody says that puzzle workers don't get Alzheimer's. And it all of a sudden things become very, when that fact comes in, the whole thing becomes very real. I mean, as opposed to some like fantasy or, you know, anecdote or something like that. All of a sudden you're nailed down by this peculiar fact. And I think, in my reading, that's one of the wonderful characteristics of Melody's work, is that the reader gets scientific facts. I mean, established facts that you would never get in another novel, except perhaps in a weird and wicked way from James Joyce. No other novelist ever puts in any facts. It's all just talk, you know. And those facts are what nail down the book for me. They make it important to read.
Very interesting. Let's talk to Michael for a moment. Michael Sumner is sitting here quietly with us. You are the designer, and this whole little series is published by Burning Books, which the two of you, Michael and Melody, have been doing together for quite a long time, is that right?
Oh, yeah, since 1979. We never intended to do that. I mean, I being a designer and she a writer, we never thought of that until somehow Melody came up with this weird idea to make this form thing, and then somebody else said, well, I have a press. You could make that into a book. And we said, hey, a book, wouldn't that be fun? And so we had to come up with a name, and then another idea for another book. And then there's been 27 ideas for... And they're always a simple idea that's going to be real fun, and it takes three times as long as you think, and... You know, you just want to get done with that one and come up with another idea.
But the thing that's beautiful about this to me is that they're both books and artworks. So this little set of four books, I mean, I say little because you can hold it in your hand in a very comfortable way. And it has a beautiful slipcase that you have designed and assembled by hand. And the whole thing has a very artistic handmade feel to it, the books themselves and the presentation.
Well, there's more to it than that because we had to design it to fit the book so they're not too tight and they don't fall out. So I lost a lot of sleep adjusting by a 72nd of an inch the folding and scoring and die cutting. And then you do have to put them all together. I mean, we have to actually glue them, and they actually were a little bit large on one edge, so I have to trim that off. So they are handmade. I mean, but I don't want it to look like that.
And he won an award for this design as well, we want to add.
Yes, one of the winners of the Southwest Book Design and Production Awards for Excellence.
Anyway, it was a fun thing to make a series. I mean, to make five books that relate. And they're really the little pocketbook size. We always love those. Those pocketbooks, I mean, they were called pocketbooks.
Pulp fiction.
Sort of fiction from the post-war and all that.
Right.
This is the first time it's unusual, apparently, we've been told, to bring out, you know, first edition work in this scale. It's kind of, like, weird these days.
And we do have e-books, too. They're all in every e-book format known to the universe of humankind.
Which was, as a designer, a huge kind of sadness because it's very crude what they do with e-books. I mean, you can get... these books aren't complicated designs, but the fact that it has two typefaces is not available in e-book. Even.
Right, and which is really part of the essence of this book.
Yeah, and well, in Melody's particular book. Melody's has three typefaces within the voices.
Right.
So that you lose that, plus the reader gets to choose the typeface that they like best, which I'm glad I don't know what they choose.
Well, the book set is called The Quadrant Series, Debut Novels by Seasoned Writers, and there's a bonus book in it. And the book party is this Friday, the 29th of June at 5:30. At Opposite Books, which is at 930C Baca Street here in Santa Fe. And all of the folks sitting at this table will be with us, and also Thomas Frick, who is the
fourth
author.
Right, he's coming in from L.A. on our little, you know, that little airplane that flies right into Santa Fe.
So. Ah, that little airplane. Yeah. And there will be a guest reader there as well.
Yes, yeah, Sarah Scanese is going to perform.
And food and beverages, and I will be introducing these wonderful people. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank you all for being with us. Michael Sumner, Melody Sumner Carnahan, Lynn Larson, and Robert Ashley, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.